Welcome into the latest edition of That's So Cincinnati. Excited to be back with you. It's October. It feels like July. That's So Cincinnati, isn't it?
Or something like So Florida, I think.
Yeah. It is. Politics expert Jace Williams here with myself, Bengals beat writer Paul Newman Jr., as we talk about all the things happening in your town, our village, the Queen City. You know what's funny is I'm excited about this. Election Day is really jumping
4 weeks
on
from today.
It's crazy
as we record on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's
a
crazy
month away.
That we're that close to it right now because it feels like it's kind of been in the discussion for a while, but now it's right down to time. So many people, I've mentioned this on previous episodes, so many people get to election day and they stand in that ballot booth and they realize, I have no idea what issue one is, or I have no idea who these people are in this race. And we're going to fix that today.
Issue one,
Jesse Ballmer, our state government reporter, is going to come in and explain to everybody. It is so damn complicated, and there's so much jargon. And my wife is a prosecutor, and she talks about this stuff all the time, and I still try to wrap my brain around it totally. It's such a complicated issue. Jesse's going to come in, and we think she's going to do a great job of helping explain to the average person what this issue is about and who's fighting it and why they're fighting it for and why Facebook's involved.
Yeah. Jesse does a tremendous job. There's a lot of, and especially, I think we've talked about this in a previous episode, that, our collective eyes can glaze over a little bit about Columbus politics here in Cincinnati. And I think Jesse does a tremendous job of really breaking down what's going on up there and making it relevant to readers and voters' lives. And I'm looking forward to and she had a great piece on this issue one.
Yeah.
Not too long, or I guess it was last week or early last week. She's done the same thing on the ECOT scandal, which can make your eyes glaze over, but that's the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow issue that I don't know if we'll talk about or not here before the election or at all. But she does these quick hit Q&A explainers on this stuff that are just,
they're huge.
They are huge.
Because it's when you get to it, what is it? It's probably Monday night in November, and you're sitting there wondering, what the hell is issue one? And you can go through her story there and really get an understanding of what's going on. She's going to do that here as well, or you can just listen to us talk about it for 15 minutes and explain it for you too.
I'd rather have Jesse do it.
I totally agree. She's an expert on it, so it's going to be great to have her in here. We'll get to that. And the other side of this, and I've said before, we've talked about, we don't want this to be the AFTAB show. It's obviously the number one most watched thing, the Shabbat Pureval race that's happening here right in our backyard. But a rare thing happened this week, in that both of these candidates were in our building, right over there, inside of the little fishbowl room, and sat down with yourself, the editorial board, and everybody, an hour and a half each, fielding all the questions and everything about themselves. This is the ideal opportunity for us, and we, more than we will, this is going to be it. This is where we're going to kind of go in on this race. Mm-hmm. Since we just sat down and we just talked to them about their beliefs and where they think this is at, let's talk about observations from these three hours that you just spent with these candidates. What was your number one takeaway of what you heard over these interviews?
My number one takeaway, can I say one of each?
You
can
say whatever you want. I'm giving you the floor.
So I do want to make sure that, because there are some editorial boards who do actually do candidates in at the same time.
Yeah,
and it's almost like a debate forum. The Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com, does that. We do it separately. We had Steve Shabbat in on Monday and Aftab Pirival in on Tuesday. My number one takeaway from Shabbat's the discussion with Shabbat was he was very insistent on giving a list of things that he has accomplished or believes he has accomplished. And that's something that he gets hit a lot on in campaigns, is that he doesn't accomplish anything. He's not accomplished anything in his 22 years in Congress. So what I found was interesting was that his team came with it was like a little booklet of things that they put together, like Word document things that he not just had done in the last in this session, but in really over his career. And then it was interesting because he had a handwritten note card. It was bigger than a note card, but a handwritten card basically on both sides. And he made a point in his closing argument or his closing statement. Sorry, there's not a debate. To go down a list of like, hey, I want to make sure that these are the things I've done and I'm proud of. And he used this phrase or this term. He's like, it burns me when people say I haven't done anything. And he said that a couple times. And so you could tell it gets under his skin that when people hit him on what has he accomplished. And this is coming off. It also, I think he was a little perturbed. I had written a column last weekend questioning what he has done on the Western Hills Viaduct, which
we talked about on TSC.
We did. That's
week.
Right. We talked about it last week, and I wrote a column about it. And he was gracious. He was very gracious in our discussion. And he joked around with me about it. But the reason why I was critical of him is because, and again, I think we talked about this last week, but this is a bridge that goes to his own neighborhood. And so he explained, why it's taken so long to get to that, and that it take, typically the standard thing on, a federal or a big project like that, or the local politicians have to prioritize it before they come to the federal, the lawmakers. But he wanted to make it a point to, in his list of things he's done, he pointed out that he is now on top of getting money for the Western Hills Viaduct, which he's helped get about $9 million so far for in between two grant programs. So I did find I just found that interesting that he was, I wouldn't say testy about it, but he was certainly, he came to make sure that he pointed that out in a forum that we rarely see him in. He doesn't talk to the media a lot. Especially on the campaign side of things, he rarely talks to the media. And so for him to come and sit down with the editorial board for an hour and a half, we really got a glimpse into him.
Did he say much about the idea that he's run up a lot of negativity in his campaign? Was that brought up?
It was brought up. And he sidestepped it. I don't know, sidestep, is that the right word? He maybe, but his thing was, well, that was the NRCC, which is the, the arm. It's Paul Ryan's group that runs these outside ads, and they pay for them. And so he's, he put it over on them and said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, I don't really like some of that negativity either. But
it says at the end, I'm Steve Shabbat, and I approve this message.
That would be a separate. So
yeah.
We specifically asked him about the NRCC's ad about trying to connect Aftab to his old law firm, who has represented right. the Libyan government in some terrorist types of court cases. Overall, Shabbat said he doesn't like negativity. But the truth of the matter is that's what Steve Shabbat does. I mean, to put it bluntly, he likes to try to define his opponent, and he tries to do that with negative attack ads. He's certainly not alone in that way. But it was interesting because he was asked a question about civility, and he's a really nice guy. And like, you'll hear Democrats talk about, he's not the kind of guy that you would think he is if you just saw his ads or ads that are run on his behalf. He's a very nice guy, very personable. Easy to talk to, but he, he or the civility thing he talked about, he's like, I'm not a desk slammer. I've spent, you know, my career working across the aisle, and he has done that. John Conyers, he worked with him a lot. They've worked together a lot on some things in Congress. But, you know, if you look at the ads, you cannot deny the fact that the ads are negative, and the outside ads, the ads that are paid for by his campaign, and that's his approach. And that's been his approach, not just in this race, but when he faced Steve Driehaus, when he faced John Cranley in the 1st Congressional District, and down through the years. Roxanne Qualls ran in that. I mean, so yeah, over his.
All in his wake.
All in his wake, yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's in his 22nd year there.
Well, Steve Driehaus put Chabot in his wake for 2 years.
Yeah,
and then Chabot took the job back.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that happens on Monday. Then Aftab Pirival comes in on Tuesday. What was your impression of what he had to say?
He came in, you know, so he's been, I know we've touched on this in the show as well, but, you know, you could tell he came in almost waiting for the question about his campaign finance issues and mm-hmm. some of the redaction gate or whatever we want to call it,
yep.
and some of the, you know, the poll that was questionable, whether that was done for the clerk's race and all that. So you could tell every answer that he had to everything, he quickly turned it back on. But Chabot's been there for 22 years and he's not done anything. Mm-hmm. But Chabot's done this, but Chabot's done that. And so any question you would ask him would always, you know, would start out, you know, the question we asked him, he's still really not answered questions about his campaign finance issues other than to say it's in litigation, or it's not in litigation in court, but it is at the Ohio Elections Commission. So he says it's a legal issue right now.
He basically, as far as what I saw, I mean, he denied and said he's talked to his campaign. Nothing like that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, he did. And that was the other thing I was going to, the other point I was going to make is that, he said, if something is found that we did something wrong, then we'll fix that, or we'll correct it, or we'll do whatever it takes to make amends for that. It's interesting. While I was live tweeting this editorial board right before we recorded this, and Mac Mariani, who's a political science professor at Xavier, tweeted in response to one of my tweets saying that he's like, he must have polling that shows if he just comes out and apologizes for this and says, you know what, made a mistake, folks, sorry, that it could be detrimental to him. I thought that was interesting because, I don't know, I'm always, and maybe this is just me as a nonpartisan, is that I always, think that, a candidate just comes clean and says, I am sorry.
Made a mistake.
That you almost see, you're willing, a lot of times you're willing to forgive.
Mm-hmm. Where do they stand on gun control, the two of them?
Chabot is, you know, he's a pro Second Amendment. He talked about that. He kind of hemmed and hawed a little bit, as I'm trying to recall, about some common sense things, but didn't really address whether there needs to be any bans on anything. Aftab, interesting you asked that question, because Aftab, he was asked the same question and came out and said, Chabot has taken the fourth highest amount of donations from the NRA, and I believe he was referring to among Congress or the House. Now, I quickly looked that up, and I didn't see him on any top 10 lists. But, you know, this was the last list I saw in a couple media reports was from February, so it's possible he sees something else. So I don't want to, you know, say he's completely wrong on that, because that was on a quick fact check, and then I came in here to record.
Right.
But Aftab did talk about he would like to see military assault weapons banned, and, I think that's a fair, probably something you would hear from a Democrat, and you're hearing a lot from Republicans as well, and right now.
Yeah. That's always, especially considering, I mean, it's a massive issue across the country, but locally even more with what's happened here lately.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like that is an, it's the one issue I think that so many people will just stick on. It's the one thing to me, I think, that so many people will be like, where do you stand on this? That's mm-hmm. how I'm going to vote, you know? And so Shabbat, I guess, is maybe not as with the NRA as AFTAB likes to paint him as, but is more so than AFTAB is, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think Shabbat shies away from the fact that, you know, he's very pro Second Amendment, yeah. and you know, he's a conservative, and
yep.
and conservatives or most conservative politicians are right there in lockstep with the pro Second Amendment folks. And so that's not a surprise how he answered that. If I could switch gears and point out something else that just came to mind that was interesting that AFTAB pointed out. He was asked about the job he thinks Donald Trump has done, and he was asked also what grade he would give Donald Trump. Interestingly, he did not attack the president. Now, early on in the campaign, I remember this, I covered his launch back in January, and he could not hammer Trump more than he could. You know, he was trying to tie Shabbat with Trump. And today, though, he was, you could clearly tell he was trying to distinguish the two. He was not lumping the two together. I remember back in the launch that he was linking Shabbat and Trump on health care, and he did not do that today. And he actually was asked, you know, what grade would you give Trump? And he said, you know, he's only been there 2 years, and I'm paraphrasing. He's like, you didn't really, you know, I think, and, you know, it's just not enough time yet to give him a grade. But yet he turns around and says, you know, I can tell you, though, I would give Steve Shabbat an F for the 22 years he's been there.
Right.
And so that was another example of that. He's trying to turn every question, anything, into flipping it back and attacking Shabbat. I just thought it was interesting. And he did say at one point, you know, kind of a standard line, though. He's like, you know, if elected, or I think he said when I'm elected, of course, you know, the confidence that he would, you know, hope to work with Trump, and he specifically mentioned Trump and the House Republicans.
Yeah. Very interesting. Where's the polling at on this right now? Do we have any idea of where we're at?
Well, the New York Times had a poll, you know, that was, I guess, it finished it a week ago Monday. And it was a live polling. And this is probably why AFTAB has backed off Trump, is because it indicated, or he took it as an indication that, like, attacking Trump isn't going to work. But that poll had Shabbat up 9 points.
Yeah.
I believe. Sometimes I get my polls mixed up, yeah. But I believe that was a 9-pointer.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye. We'll keep an eye on that, what the polling says, and see as we get closer to that. But hey, good to have those candidates here in the House and to sit there for that. I mean, that's a lot of time to sit there and just take on the questions. And now, is there any, what's the debates going to be between these two?
So there's three scheduled debates coming up. I don't have the dates in front of me, other than we are hosting the Inquirer in conjunction with our partners, Fox 19. The Cincinnati Chamber and UC, we are hosting that on October 30th. We don't have all the details yet on that, but that's definitely, the date is October 30th.
October 30th.
So that'll be, yeah, just a little over a week from Election Day, and that'll you know, that'll be their final debate.
For the final debate, we will have that here. Keep it locksandsane.com. So we have lots of fallout. There will be lots written from what was said here, sitting down with the editorial board. And I'm sure you'll have more on it as we continue to go. So keep that locked on us. All right. Let's move to another huge issue on the ballot this year, and that's issue one. And that means we got to bring in our good friend who's in from Columbus. She's down in Cincinnati with the candidates here. She came down.
Yeah.
And so it's great to have Jesse Ballmer in. So we got to sit down with her and talk a little bit. Perfect opportunity to talk issue one. All right, it's interview time here on the TSC, and Jason, we've been talking about wanting to dive into some of these these ballot initiatives, some of these issues that are going to be on it. Because what is it? People go and they go to the polls and they get there and they freak out and go, I don't know what issue one is and I don't understand it. I don't know what I want to vote, but people don't understand it. So what do we do when this happens? We go to Jesse Ballard.
We bring in the expert.
We bring in the expert, state government reporter for us here at Cincinnati.com, who is all over this stuff. And I'm just going to start this way. Jesse, what is this? What is the base? What, if you had to nutshell this, what is issue one?
So the basics of issue one is it is a ballot initiative to change the state constitution to reduce penalties for drug users. The goal and the supporters want to reduce the number of people who are in prison by reducing the penalties for drug possession. Also, some things like reducing the time spent in prison if you do educational programs or treatment or some so forth. And then opponents of issue one are very concerned that a large amount of drugs could now result in a misdemeanor, like a lower level offense that would lead you to county jail time instead of going to prison.
And along lines, so Republicans have ended up on essentially on the no side and Democrats on the yes side. Is that fair?
That is largely the case. Yeah. On the governor's race, Mike DeWine, the Republican running, is staunchly opposed to this. One of the biggest opponents has been Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, who is a Republican. On the other side, Democrat Rich Cordray has come out in favor of it. I believe both attorney general's candidates, both the Democrat and the Republican, are saying this is maybe not the best approach. So that's one reaching across the aisle moment.
Yeah. Joe Dieters has been on the no side of it, I know, here locally.
As has his brother, Dennis Dieters, who's a Court of Appeals judge. He wrote an op-ed recently about that. You know, you explain it, and it sounds pretty ho-hum, but I thought this was a great lead that you had, and you had a really nice, Jesse, you had a really nice explainer on this. Was this last week? Recently. And you wrote, hyperbolic claims about Ohio Issue 1 have already hit the airwaves and opinion pages statewide. It's become a wedge issue in the governor's race. Why has it become such a lightning rod?
Well, I think if you've been listening to ads, you probably heard something akin to Rich Cordray would like to let drug offenders and drug dealers out on the streets, or Mike DeWine doesn't care about drug users or people who might be addicted and need treatment. And so it's quickly become that way. I think it's partially because this ballot initiative would reduce drug possession for fourth and fifth degree felonies to a misdemeanor offense. And so basically, if you have a certain amount of a drug, it would now be a misdemeanor and you'd be sent to county jail as opposed to a felony and sent to a state prison. And so for those people, it's reducing their sentences.
Do you think the fact that Mark Zuckerberg, billionaires Mark Zuckerberg and George Soros, and they're, you know, it's outside money and it's an outside idea, do you think that is also fueling some of the Republican pushback?
So I think so. Anything that George Soros does is automatically going to be a hot button issue for Republicans. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be something hard for them to swallow. But I also think Ohio has a massive drug problem. We are one of the highest states per capita for overdoses. It is an issue that is affecting our state and affecting our community. And so it's just a topic that people feel very deeply, you know, regardless.
One thing, too, I've noticed, I noticed DeWine has said this in, I know he said it in the debate last night as we're recording now. The final debate was Monday night, and we're recording on Tuesday. I believe he said it in another debate, is that, you know, essentially we're going, if this passes, it's going to open the door to the cartels to bring fentanyl in, because all the surrounding border states have tougher drug laws than we do. Is that a lot of that hyperbole there, or what? Have you been able to fact check that or take a look at that?
So the one thing that opponents point to is fentanyl, which is this very dangerous type of opioid. It's even more dangerous than like morphine or heroin. It's just very potent, and it's been a huge problem in the Cincinnati area. And so the way this ballot initiative is written, just shy of 20 grams of fentanyl could now be a misdemeanor, and that is enough doses to cause up to 10,000 overdoses just because of how potent it is. And so that's where Mike DeWine comes across, and opponents of this come across, saying if you have that much of a drug, like, you are a drug dealer. And supporters of this ballot initiative are saying, yeah, that's right. They would be charged with drug trafficking, drug dealing, instead of drug possession, if that were the case. The other thing is the federal laws aren't changing because of this. It's a state initiative. And so, you know, federal prosecutors could still go in and prosecute some people for these types of things. But I do think people who don't like this initiative are right in saying that it would make Ohio's drug laws more lax. And if that's something that concerns you, you know, compared to the surrounding state, that is something you should consider on your ballot.
How did this thing end up here?
So I think it's largely because Ohio is a bit of a test market for ballot initiatives in general. If you recall, last year we had one on drug pricing initiatives. We almost had one on kidney dialysis this year, but it didn't get to the ballot. And so this is something, a similar type proposal passed in California. It's something that people have looked at in other states. And so I think the idea is, if you can bring it to Ohio, and if it works here, maybe it's something you can roll out to other Midwestern states or other areas that, you know, might vote similarly.
And isn't more money focused towards, at least money, time, energy towards rehab as part of the one side of this as well, where rather than, you know, so instead of prisons, you're focused more on rehab. Is that kind of part of what this is too?
Yeah. So part of the ballot initiative is taking the money saved from sending fewer people to prison and putting that towards treatment, or putting it towards, you know, helping educate people about kind of these diversion options. So that's definitely one thing that's
and part lessening of it. Sentence. Is there a lessening of sentences by a certain amount at all connected to this? Or,
well, if you were charged previously with a fourth degree felony, which I believe can lead to up to like a year and a half of prison time, now that would be a misdemeanor, with the maximum penalty being 6 months in jail. So it would reduce the amount of time you could potentially get on a sentence. Prosecutors and folks are pointing out that a lot of these people with the lower level drug felonies are ending up in probation anyway. That was kind of a push as of late to send fewer drug users and more drug dealers to prison.
How much money are we talking about here that's getting poured into this campaign? Is there a lot of money being poured in from the outside to fight it? Right now, you know, just overall, how much money is being poured in?
Yeah, I know there's a decent number of contributions coming in from the Yes folks. Like we mentioned, Mark Zuckerberg's kind of advocacy arm has invested in this ballot initiative. George Soros's group has. The opponents are more like the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association or the Ohio Judicial Conference. And so I think they're organized, but maybe have less money to put things on the air. I think you've perhaps already seen a couple ads went up this week for the proponents of Issue 1. And they are essentially people talking about how this would benefit them or their children who struggled with addiction.
So to give some context to you had mentioned that we're a testing ground, and you referenced last year's Issue 2, which had to do with drug pricing. And I see a lot of similarities in that also was tried, and I'm not sure if it was passed in California or not, but clearly it was another test drive here that they tried, they being outsiders. And in that case, it was Michael Weinstein, who's maybe the biggest AIDS activist in America. Do you think there will be, do you see this one as being as controversial as the one last year? I remember it being really controversial because Weinstein is a controversial figure, and he'd fought the porn industry, and he's fought the drug companies. I can't remember the exact amount of money, but there were tens of millions of dollars, I think, ultimately was poured into that one. Do you see this one being that as controversial and as much money being poured in?
I think probably a little bit less money is going to be poured in. Another thing that's different from last year's ballot initiative is this was written by folks in Ohio. Okay. Stephen Johnson Grove, actually with a Cincinnati area organization that works on criminal justice reform, that really had tried to go through lawmakers to get something passed. They'd been part of task force and panels looking at, you know, the problem of sending too many people to prison and try to go at it that way, and just didn't see the results that they wanted from state lawmakers, and so are now going to a ballot initiative. So I think in that way it is a little bit less controversial, but this is happening during a midterm election, during a governor's race. People are looking for any way to distinguish themselves from their opponents, and so it's really been just kind of grabbed upon by the politicians on the ballot this November.
Yeah. Your ears to the ground statewide. What any thoughts on how this thing's gonna go? Is it gonna pass, gonna fail? What's your...
So there were a couple polls coming out. Baldwin Wallace poll today had it passing by, I think, 17 percentage points. I think the argument that opponents have that up to 20 grams of fentanyl resulting in the deaths of 10,000 people is a very compelling argument. I think it's perhaps something that those who wrote this at ballot initiative didn't anticipate. I think that's going to be hard. The other decent argument that they come up with is there are things called drug courts that have been set up all across the state. And the idea being, if you're facing a drug offense, you go in there and maybe you get probation. If you go to treatment and complete some programming to, you know, try to help address your addiction or disease. And then if you don't do all the right things, then there's this threat of prison time hanging over your head. And the idea of kind of taking away the stick and only having the carrot in those cases, that's something that prosecutors are very concerned about.
And let's face it, the majority of voters probably aren't going to look in the weeds and look at really what this is truly about. They're going to hear the little snippets that they hear in ads on the radio, and then they're going to form their opinion on it one way or the other and go with that, right? Is that usually how these things work?
It's definitely one of those things where you hope people really dive into the issues, but everyone's busy, and it can be a little bit complicated, especially if you don't have a history of dealing with drug offenses or the criminal justice system, and that's most people, I would imagine.
That's the hard part about this is this is something that is... There's complicated arguments on both sides, where that's why I like being able to air it out here a little bit for anybody that wants to kind of, because you need 15 minutes to really understand all the pros and cons. And even we could go on for another 45 minutes at least just talking about everything. That's to me, that's the hard part about some stuff like this, is that the average person that's going to decide this isn't really going to have a full understanding of what all is about to go down or what it means.
And that's why opponents of these types of constitutional amendments say it's best to take these issues to your state lawmakers, where it's in state law, which is easy to amend. Like if one portion of the law isn't working, they can pass another law and adjust it. If this doesn't work, then we have to go back to the ballot again and pass another constitutional amendment. But you know, the counter argument to that is, if the lawmakers aren't doing what you want them to do, what is the alternative?
A couple other quick questions. Mark Zuckerberg being involved, the Facebook creator, founder. Have we seen him get engaged in politics much at all? Is this what's his story there, you know, in terms of being politically engaged?
Well, he has this kind of advocacy arm that looks at criminal justice issues. So this is in his group's wheelhouse. But I guess I'd be surprised if Mark Zuckerberg shows up in Ohio and starts stumping for this issue. So giving money towards it, it's an interesting name that, you know, people can look at. But I don't know if it has a dramatic effect on the results of this ballot initiative.
And the other question I had was, do you think, knowing that Mike DeWine's been the attorney general, ultimately he'll be the attorney general for the last 8 years, and the opioid crisis, we're ground zero for the opioid crisis. Do you think there's some politics behind this whole thing, and that it was created to try to show him up, or do you think that's completely separate from the governor's race ultimately?
I feel like I don't have a good handle on it. I think the fact that these are both on the ballot at the same time, you have two governor's candidates who used to be the state's top cop, top attorney, the state attorney general. And so it's interesting because both of these men have experience with, you know, addressing these types of criminal justice issues. Both are attorneys. But I don't think it was quite so organized as to be on the ballot to address the governor's race.
Okay.
Jesse, thank you so much for coming in and helping us try to understand this so that when people sit there in the voting booth, they can maybe make an educated decision instead of one that just flashed across their screen as they watched something on television. Thank you for coming in, and I appreciate it. It's good to have you in Cincinnati for a little bit.
Yeah, it's been great. I guess I encourage people to read up on this one.
Yeah, Cincinnati.com. Make sure you check out. She has a great explainer on all that up on the site. So if you want to go deeper into this, you can obviously read that, and there'll be more on it, obviously, as we get much closer to the voting day.
Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Much thanks again to Jesse for coming down. Great to see her here in the Cincinnati offices. She spends most of her time working it up there in Columbus, and credit again to her for all the great work she does. Keep it locked. She will continue to be writing all the inside information you need as we get closer to Election Day and all the other news that's going on up there in Columbus. So thanks again to Jesse for joining us. All right, it's that time. People have been talking about this, Jason. People want to know, are That's a Cincinnati Moments? It's a very popular segment.
I love it. It is a popular segment.
It's a popular segment.
It's great. There's a great sponsor for it, too.
Cincinnati.com.
Log on and love it.
Log on.
I'm telling you, man, I am trying to.
You're bringing back the log on.
I'm trying to get the marketing department to, you know, embrace me.
Embrace
it. I'm kidding.
Yeah, see you too. Just hugging it out.
Give a shout out to my good friend, and we hope yours, Burl Love.
Oh yeah,
he's the man,
champion of the TSC.
Yes, he is.
That's it. We got to find out what his next.
As Marty Brenneman would say, read him daily.
His next That's a Cincinnati Moment. He had the God's Mac and Cheese.
God's Mac or God's?
God's.
I know, I'm kidding.
Mac. Let's not go back down there again.
It was a religious experience,
yes,
apparently.
Exactly.
Tickle pickle.
I have one. So I have, and this is truly a so Cincinnati moment. I had my wife's mother was babysitting for us. She does periodically on Fridays. So date night. Was very excited for that. You know, able to go out. And I'm trying to figure out.
Did you get dressed up?
Nah, you'll see why not. Okay. So we're kind of trying to kind of discuss, think about what we want to do. And, you know, I'm pretty happy to report that I was able to go to a high school football game.
Yeah.
Ate some Adriaticos.
Which
is delicious.
Did you get is it just a slice or did you get like a whole big
one of those
monstrous pies?
Oh, you did? And some tots.
They have like
a couple of pops.
Is it the Bearcat, I think so it's called?
The bear, you cannot split it. Two people cannot split a Bearcat. A Bearcat can only really be split amongst like eight people. It is insanely huge. It's ridiculous and delicious. Adriatico's like, hey, not a sponsor. We'd love for you to be a sponsor of the TSC. But
name dropping, baby.
Dude,
tickle pickle.
Their
tickle
pizza,
pickle.
Tickle pickle. Their pizza is delicious. So my alma mater, Moeller, played Elder at the NIP at Nippert Stadium. And so I was able to hit Adriatico's, went to a high school football game, saw a couple of my buddies that I went to high school with.
Mike Pugh. Who? Oh, you're making fun of me.
No, I'm making because you name dropped. You decided to name drop everyone you ever went to high school with last week, which I really enjoyed thoroughly.
Well, my high school friends enjoyed it too.
I bet they did. You make them listen?
I Facebooked it out and some of them listened. One of my high school friends was like, I didn't know you were that smart, Jason. And she was not joking. So thanks, Nicole.
You don't look smart, but you are smart. Which you surprise people, and I think sometimes that's important.
I'm street smart, man.
Street smart. So anyway, if you have a date night, you go to a high school football game, and then you spend most of your weekend talking about said high school football game, you know what that is?
That's
so Cincinnati.
So Cincinnati.
By the way, Moeller GCL South champs after their big win over the West Side Warriors from the Pit.
Good for you.
Proud of the men.
That is so Cincinnati. See, you're talking about it now. That's like
I've been talking about
high school football.
Yeah, I mean, to go to one game a year. It's I enjoy the atmosphere. Yeah. The band, they brought back some guy who I guess went to Moeller, who claims to be a recording artist. He wears a vest and plays guitar, and yeah. It was odd, and I was concerned about that.
Does that mean he's country western?
No, he called himself groove rock.
Okay.
I'm not totally positive what that was, but he did like to move his feet while he played the guitar.
Honky-tonk?
It was weird. It certainly wasn't what you normally see from a band, and the fact that normal members of the band had to just like hang out behind him and just play like they're like his like little background people. I'm like, come on, this is their time to shine, not Vest Man.
What's his name?
Oh, I can't remember. Zach Waters.
So you just threw out another one of your high school buddies' names.
I don't know who that guy is.
Oh, you don't.
He wears a
mask. Wait, who was the guy's name you said under your breath? You don't need to say under your breath. Just
Mike Pugh.
What's up, Mike Pugh? How you
Mike
going,
Pugh,
buddy?
My boy. I went to school with Mike Pugh since I was like 6 years old.
Is Mike in the cornhole tournament?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's all right, cornhole good.
Tournament. Never won it, but he's in it. He'll be there.
Love
if
it.
You show up, you guys will be buddies.
It seems to be a repetitive thing on this show that we mentioned the cornhole tournament.
Because it's the most popular sporting event in Cincinnati.
We give Burl a shout out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're fairly predictable at this point. We make a lot of the same jokes.
And there's one thing that you haven't mentioned yet today that has made it in every episode.
I'll get there.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to wait for you to get
your Kolache moment. Oh, no, you're going to forget it. You're going
to
forget it.
No, I'm not. I was waiting for you to give me your curmudgeon moment of the week. I think we've decided that I'll do that to Cincinnati, and you'll talk about something that clearly shows how old you are and curmudgeonly.
I'll tell you, man, I was like, I had dinner with my wife and two boys, or I was meeting them for dinner at Jason's Deli in Norwood. Well, it's technically Norwood.
We always think
of it as Oakley.
Norwood collects the taxes on that.
They
baby.
Do. At the
proudly.
Rookwood area, there's the Rookwood. It's the Rookwood Exchange.
Yeah, it's right where
the Rookwood Exchange.
It's right
Rookwood
where the courtyard.
Pavilion, Rookwood.
Yes, Courtyard, Taste of Belgium,
Commons.
Capitol Grill, all yeah. that stuff across from the old Rookwood. Comments,
yeah, the area that was in eminent domain for ever.
Yes.
Anyway, so I meet him there, Jason's Deli, last Thursday night, and they get there a little before I do, so they're standing there patiently waiting, the 5-year-old and the 2-year-old and my wife.
That doesn't last long.
In front of Jason's, and I drive by, and she, you know what, I give my wife credit. She gave me a heads up, knowing that I'm not a really patient guy. She gave me the heads up that parking is abysmal. So I'm like, I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, I'll just find a spot kind of far away, but I'll still find a spot. Yeah, no, I didn't. That whoever put that thing together, I mean, I was furious. And I literally, I shouldn't admit this, but at one point I'm driving through that little parking lot and I get around.
Oddly shaped, yeah.
Small, yeah. With all these great restaurants. And I drive over where the Capitol Grill parking is or in front of that.
When you see all those valet spots?
Well, you know, I didn't realize it. And there's nothing that says, oh, this part's closed. So then I get to the end of that, and they have it like a little chain that's a little plastic chain connected to, like, cones.
No.
Yep. This is how frustrated I was. I just threw my car in park, got out and moved the little cone.
Moved the cone?
And just drove right on through.
You moved the cone?
I moved the cone. I didn't get out and move it back. So
wow.
And so I drive back in front of Jason. This is going on for like 5 minutes driving around. And my wife, I could tell she's totally being fine. But she can tell that I'm getting frustrated just
yes.
seeing me through the window apparently. So I do a little like, not peeling out, but sort of drive fast a little bit, and then I get out on the street, and I park over in whatever the Northwestern Mutual Garage is there across Smith or Edwards, one of those two. I never get them right. And then I don't even get up to the door, and I've already gotten a text from my wife. Why are you so mad? Why are you know? Told you it was going to be bad.
Parking makes people mad. It does.
And so
they do have a garage back there behind Taste of Belgium. Future reference.
Oh, thanks for letting me know that now.
I mean, I didn't know. If I'd have known, I could have helped you out. But it is that is at the point that if you ever whatever busy mall you grew up by or whatever, where you just people are walking to their car and like it's a far walk and there's just like a car that just follows that person.
Well, that happened on our way out.
Yeah,
when we were leaving,
you just follow people around when you see them leaving and you just go 2 miles per hour right on their butt and just wait for them to go to their car and then take their spot. That's what that has become in there.
See, I don't have the patience for that either, and I don't like making people feel pressure like that because I'm like, especially us, like we have two cars. Oh, I mean, just like a little booster seat for a 5-year-old, but it takes a minute or two to get the kids in the car.
And you never know. You could be going to the car and then making a call from the car because you don't want to talk while you're driving.
Yeah,
I got
a right
like
to
that
parking spot as long as I want it. So.
Exactly. And that's what comes with it. You know what would have helped you in this situation is if there was a streetcar that ran from downtown all the way out to Oakley, and then you wouldn't have to worry about parking because you'd have had a great streetcar that you could have ridden all the way out there.
Are you done?
No, I'm just saying you could have that way. You wouldn't have had any issues. You wouldn't even needed a car.
Are you done?
Yeah. That's it.
Are you getting us out of this, or we got any more? We got anything else?
I don't know. Do you have anything else? I'm happy for whatever else you'd like to complain about, old man.
I'll tell you what, though, we've got some, for as great as the Oakley, or I should say Oakley near, when it becomes Rookwood Exchange, we've got some gripes about some of the shopping stuff, little center areas
over
there.
I like all the growth that has happened. It has brought in a lot of really great places.
It has.
But it gets crowded. These places get crowded. That's inherently what happens.
It does.
I mean, and there is a lot of chicken and workout places happening.
You been to Raising Cane's yet?
I've been to Raising Cane's. It's fine.
We're Raising Cane on the TSC.
I'm totally telling you. Raising Cane's needs to take full ownership of the Sunday thing, and they need to blow out their Sundays and have like huge parties going on in their parking lot. No Chick-fil-A today. Come get your Raising Cane's. Party it up.
You'll play up the whole Raising Cane, too. You know, raising hell on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah, it's bad.
I think there's something to that. I think if you want to
Raising Cane's, you guys want to advertise the TSC? The door is open.
That's it. All we need is free Cane's for life.
Yeah. Although Paul doesn't like you, so.
I like you on Sundays. When I need my chicken. Anyway, all right. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Again, reminder:
tickle pickle.
tell your friends about us that you enjoy it. It keeps you up to date on what's going on in the city. We're gonna keep it rolling with lots of stuff as we get closer, not just to Election Day, but just on whatever the heck's going on in the city. Try to keep you informed. Leave comments, subscribe, all the things, and we'll keep this coming to you every Wednesday. Thanks everybody for listening again. Talk to you next week.
Tickle pickle.